This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. He is Anthony Pusick. How are you today, sir?
You have an embargo that you cannot complain about the bracket system for 24 hours.
Okay.
Because what we have gotten is the greatest Atlantic bracket that you could have possibly asked for. You've got the Battle of Florida.
Right.
And you've got Toronto-Boston. Thanks to the Bruins' ineptitude.
Toronto about that. Yeah, like did the Bruins pull a Cavaliers last night and just mail it in against Boston because they'd rather play Toronto than Tampa? I mean, is that because they did? They really, when you look at the last two games the Boston Bruins played,
not good, Don.
They were in position to control their own destiny to win the Atlantic Division, and they didn't know what was going to happen with the Rangers, so it was still, you know, very much up in the air going back to earlier in the week that they could have still won the President's Trophy. And then you see what happened where they, against Washington, they had like 16 shots on goal, got shut out 2-0. That game was 1-0 forever. And so it was kind of a mail in there. I think at one point, with like 10 minutes to go in the game, they had 11 shots. It was like ridiculous. And then last night, they're home against Ottawa, can lock up the division. And listen, give Ottawa credit. I think the Senators have played pretty well down the stretch, but a no-show there too. So they lose in regulation those two games in a row, and it costs them the division. So I'd hate to think that that was the case. You better hope if you're a Bruins fan that is the case, and that they're going to, or is this team just like petering out of the absolute worst possible time? But they own Toronto, but this is a different Leafs team. If that's what they were hoping for, they better be careful, because right now I'll do the work, but I'm loving Toronto in this matchup.
Yeah, you were talking about this with me the other day, and I got to tell you, I mean, first of all, Florida, after struggling a little bit, and I thought, as I said, I thought they were going to win the President's Trophy. They obviously did not. They end up winning that division. The way that they played Toronto, not like Toronto didn't. I guess Toronto had nothing to play for, but if Toronto really wanted to make sure they played Florida, they would want to win that game. They looked really good. And Toronto, once again, you have the conversation about, well, it's Toronto. Remember, Toronto won last year and lost to the Panthers in the second round. So if you're going to be a Bruins team limping in and you've got Austin Matthews going for 70 goals, I don't know. I think you might be right, Don. This might be a year where, again, Boston might get bounced out early. Well, now, I think that just like the Rangers, I don't think that a week's worth of games or a couple of bad games should dictate how you feel about the team overall. They've been very impressive this year, and I think it's going to be a long series. But if you tell me, oh, it's going to be just like it always is and Boston's going to own Toronto, I don't think that that's the case this year at all.
Yeah, and it's not like Tampa. They got a game, you know, coming up tonight, but it's not like Tampa's been setting the world on fire either. They've lost a couple in a row, just 5 wins in their last 10. But we know what they represent, and we know that that's going to be a tough matchup. But I think Toronto can be tough as well. Take history out of it. The Leafs have been a better team than Tampa, but I think something's going on there in Boston. We've talked ad nauseum about the loss of Krejci and Bergeron maybe hurting this team at some point. But certainly, different situation. They were world beaters last year and didn't face any adversity and got bounced in the first round. And now they did face some adversity, so maybe the reverse will happen. But as EJ's always said, Anthony, it's really about matchups, and we found out Florida was much better than their 8 seed indicated last year. Still no excuse for Boston to bow out in the first round after winning the President's Trophy, but it's the circumstances were not, you know, apples to apples comparisons of other President's team champions that were bounced in the first round. That was a much better Panther team than their 8 seed showed. So
agreed.
We'll see. But so it is set because of everything that happened last night. You know, we know back on Monday the Rangers secure the President's Trophy, so they're locked in with Washington. Congratulations on the Capitals. I guess the big thing about this game is that it appeared that Philadelphia had scored the first goal. That Farabee had scored on what at least the announcers felt. And I was listening to the game driving home the way that Tim Saunders described it, and then, you know, watching the replay, should it have been a continuing play? The whistle blew, but no one really had anything to do with the puck ended up going in the first place. So the feeling was, Well, then the goal should have counted. Kelly Sutherland had blown the whistle, but because the play continued, but because the puck ended up going off of a flyer, that erased the continuation. Although some may say it might have gotten it off a capital. John Tortorella refused to address it, said next question in the postgame press conference. I'm sure you got a chance to see it. Were the Philadelphia Flyers robbed of taking an early 1-0 lead quite possibly costing them the game?
So I can see why Flyer fans would be upset about this. Obviously, if it happened to your favorite team, you'd be upset too. Here's the thing that I guess I would argue, and I have to go back and really listen to when the whistle blows. If Lindgren ends up standing up or moving as a result of the whistle, do you consider that part of why the puck went in the net? Because it does kind of seem like it gets behind him, or it's like in his padding.
Right.
So if the whistle blows, and because of that, now Lindgren stands up and says, all right, like, play's dead, and that's why it goes in, I guess that's why it's tough.
Well, you have it there, right?
I do.
So this is the only thing that I would question is the explanation after the disallowed goal. Was there is no continuation because the puck went off of a flyer.
Yeah.
So you tell me, do you think it touches Tom Wilson's stick after it bumps the pad of Lindgren? You see Wilson chop at the puck. Do you think Wilson got a piece of the puck?
No.
I think it's definitely in conversation, but I can also understand it being inconclusive. But it does look like Wilson touches the puck and it goes off a Wilson stick.
Well, wow, okay, so, yeah, it doesn't even go into his padding. It's tough, because,
it looks like the puck changes direction.
I have to go back and look at the whistle again.
But, like, looking, it's so interesting, because I think, went off of Lindgren's pad. Definitely went off of Lindgren's pad. The question, then, is,
so here's
Wilson
the
then touch?
Okay, I think it's the right call. As frustrating as it is, and here's why.
Okay.
Because you do have the situation where the whistle blows. And I just watched it, Don, about 5-6 times. The whistle blows, and that as the whistle's blowing, the puck, whether it goes off of Wilson's stick or it goes off of a pad or goes off of whatever, and Lindgren's already standing up. So you can make the argument by letter of the law, the way that you've described it so beautifully, is that because of all of the actions and movements that happened after the whistle, that could have put the puck in. If Lindgren doesn't stand himself up, his skate is not in the way and it doesn't kick off his skate and go in. That's the only thing I could think of. Very frustrating. Well, but you know what? If you're the Flyers, and I know that they've gone through a lot of adversity because they didn't have Carter Hart, you can't put yourself in a situation where you need 150 things to happen to win the game.
Absolutely. But the one thing that we can all agree on is Kelly Sutherland inadvertently blew the whistle. I don't know how he lost the puck. I mean, we've seen the puck sometimes. The whole idea is if I lose sight of the puck, this is something that fans always have to understand. Doesn't mean if everyone in the building and everybody watching on television and every announcer sees the puck, if the official loses sight of the puck, his moral imperative obligation is to blow the whistle. So it doesn't matter if you saw it. So I love that whenever I hear from fans in post-game shows or on Twitter, it's like, there, see, the puck is loose. It should count. Well, no, if the official loses sight of the puck, he's got to blow the whistle. So it doesn't matter you saw it or the camera saw it. It's about the official. But my question is, how did Kelly Sutherland lose the puck? Like, it's not underlay. It just popped in the air.
Kelly Sutherland hasn't had a good week.
Because he's the one that didn't call the cross-check on Trocheck on Tuesday. You know, listen, you're at the end of the day, you're right. Philadelphia put themselves in this situation. It just, boy, it would have really changed, I think, the complexion of the game.
I do actually think it was the right call, though, as crazy as it sounds. Whether Kelly, now, again, doesn't excuse.
It's not the right call that he blew the whistle,
blowing the whistle, right. Is no excuse for him to lose the puck. But once that already happened, like, if we ignore that part, and we say, all right, I lost the puck, I have to blow the whistle because I lost the puck, fine.
Right.
You can have the argument of whether he should have lost the puck or not. I have no problem arguing that. But once he blows the whistle, I think, in my opinion, too many things happen after the whistle's blown where you can make the argument, if you're the Washington side, well, we wouldn't have done this if we didn't. I would have been, like, Lindgren would have been looking for the puck, or he would have stood frozen. He wouldn't have backed up. All of these things could have factored in. So I think it was the right call.
Now, here's, again, you got the wrong coach in John Tortorella, who's not going to give you much of an explanation. But the other thing in play here is Ovechkin scores late in the first and takes the 1-0 lead. Is they're tied at one. late in the third period, and everybody knew they were going to have to pull the goaltender.
Yes.
Because if you didn't follow, if Washington got a point, Philadelphia is eliminated. Philadelphia owes nothing to Detroit.
Zero.
And Pittsburgh, zero.
They're, nothing.
Now, John Tortorella said after he did not know that Detroit had tied the game.
Right.
Now, why would he?
That's possible.
Because it really doesn't matter. All he's thinking about is, and he said it after the game, is that if we're tied late, I can't let them go to overtime. I got to pull the goaltender. He's under no obligation to glance at the out-of-town scoreboard and see what's happening with Detroit. Now, if he had known that Detroit had tied the game and that Philadelphia would be eliminated if Detroit went to overtime, would he still have pulled the goaltender? I don't know. Probably not. Well, because at that point, they're eliminated, so why not just go out and try to win the game straight up instead of pulling the goal?
No, you're going to play the game the way you play the game. Now
right,
it's okay.
Because now you know you don't need it, but I don't think John Tortorella, while coaching a game, or any coach or any assistant, is sitting, before we pull the goaltender, let's take a look at what the score is in Montreal. No. If that game had been earlier, let's say the Detroit game was at 7 o'clock and their game was at 7:30 and they're in the intermission and they see, well, then that's a different story. But in the heat of the moment, it's late, let's pull the goaltender. I don't know why he would ask somebody what's going on in Montreal with the Red Wings.
No, I understand from a Detroit perspective why you would be annoyed and mad. But again, another situation of don't put yourself in the situation where you need other people to help you. But You can't be staring at the scoreboard, especially with that game being the way it was, 1-1. You can't be staring at the scoreboard or having your video guy say, hey, what's the deal with the Red Wing game? It almost was, they scored and went to overtime pretty quickly in the midst of the last 5 or 6 minutes of that game.
Right.
It's not like everybody's on top. You got to be paying attention. Heaven forbid that there's a play that has to be reviewed. A puck magically bouncing in the air and kicking in on a stick and you have to go review it. There would have been earlier in the game if it wasn't a whistle. How can you worry about, what's going on in this game? Let me open up my NHL app and hope that I know that the Red Wings just tied it. The Flyers did what they had to do going into the game knowing I have to pull the goalie and win in regulation to give myself even a chance. And because that game happened so quickly, like you said, Don, if it was 30 minutes after or 30 minutes before, this is a completely different conversation. But it's frustrating that the Capitals got in because it was basically gifted to them. Well, the Flyers don't know that. The Flyers have to go do what they think is best for them, and that's winning in regulation and hoping everybody else loses in regulation. Didn't happen. And by the way, the Red Wings won anyway.
Yeah, the Red Wings won anyway, so it's a moot point. So, and just by the way, because I'm looking at goal differential, Washington makes it at minus 37. Islanders make it at minus 18. And that was Neil Smith always told me, that if you really want to see how good a team is, take a look at their goal differential. Guess who's coming on the podcast in a few minutes?
Oh, that would be Neil Smith.
Neil Smith.
That would be Neil Smith.
We'll talk to Neil Smith in a couple of minutes.
Worst goal differential for a team to make the playoffs in the Stanley Cup, Don, since?
Ever?
1991.
1991. I'm trying to think of who the lower seeds would have been in 91. That was Pittsburgh won the cup. Oh, you know what? Because it wouldn't have been the North Stars, would it? No, they went all the way to the final, but were they that bad? I don't know.
So I'm trying to look here and see who made the playoffs.
I was back in the, top four teams in each division made the playoffs. That's why that's a little skewed, because sometimes you would see awful teams.
Because the Hurricanes were a top four team in the Adams division, had a minus 38 goal differential. And they made the playoffs, I guess.
The Hurricanes or the Whalers?
Well, this is Google's funny. Google has them as the Hurricanes, so I envision that probably in 90 they were, of course, the Whalers.
Yeah, they didn't.
They were 31-38 with a minus 38 goal differential.
Yeah, so I don't
made the playoffs.
Yeah, because then they wouldn't have made the playoffs under this current format. But that's the problem is that was when you had 16 teams make the playoffs out of a 21 team league, and you had most of the divisions, I think, except the Smythe when the Sharks came. I'm trying to think who the odd team was when they merged with the WHA. Anyway, is that everybody had five teams in their division except one had six. So only one team missed the playoffs in every division. So to be in fourth place in a division, there were times
it's not the greatest.
I remember there might have been a Leafs team in the late 80s, early 90s that I swear to God, I think they made the playoffs with 66 points. But that was still good enough to make it because they were in a really crappy division and it was somebody worse than them. So they end up making the playoffs. So under this is very strange under this format to have that kind of goal differential. But for the people like me and you that complain about the shootout, well, this is an example where overtime and the shootout matters. Because yep. Detroit ended up with the same amount of points. They actually had one more win than Washington. They had 41 wins to Washington's 40. But that's not the tiebreaker. The tiebreaker is regulation wins. Washington had 32 to Detroit's 27. Now, what's interesting is that they had two more row wins than Washington had, regulation or overtime wins, but the shootout ends up mattering. So there is value to winning games in regulation. So all the people that say it should be 3 points for regulation win, 2 points for after, in kind of essence, that's what we're doing when there's a tie. Now, people throw their hands up and go, well, how often is there a tie? Well, in this situation...
For the Islanders, a lot.
Right. And the Islanders were lucky enough because they got hot and they won, they had points in 8 straight games and they made it, but it caught the Red Wings not being able to win enough in regulation cost them a playoff spot.
Look at this. We're having this conversation. Forget the conversation with the Islanders who made it on that premise. And I saw a bunch of Detroit fans trying to do the math of what would have happened if it was the 3-2-1 system. If Boston wins one more game, one more of the 15 games they lost in overtime, we're talking about Boston making the playoff, winning the Atlantic.
Yeah.
One game. They lost 15 games right. In overtime.
So it is weighted. So winning games in overtime and the shootout can end up costing you at the end of the day, and it certainly cost the Detroit Red Wings. And the microcosm of why they missed the playoffs are literally that home-and-home against Montreal, where they won both games, but one was in overtime and the other one was in the shootout because they couldn't finish off teams in regulation. Now, it wouldn't have mattered anyway, even if they had won those games in regulation, because that would have only gotten them to 29. They still would have lost the tiebreaker. But that's the difference, is that when you can't finish teams off in 60 minutes and you've got to rely on overtime in the shootout, it could end up costing you at the end of the day, and that's exactly what happened to Detroit.
Well, it is interesting, Don, of course, now as a result of Washington making it, Detroit doesn't make it. We know Philly doesn't make it because they didn't even win anyway. And then, of course, a game tonight that you can hear on 98.7 ESPN that's not even going to matter is Islanders-Penguins, because the Penguins can get up to 90 points. That's not going to get it done.
Nope.
They're going to end up a point back and not make the playoffs, and that is, they went for it. They tried. They were 7-1-2 in their last 10. They could improve that tonight. And Sidney Crosby is going to be out of the playoffs. And we were kind of talking about it a little bit on the K Show. He was not pleased when Jake Guentzel was traded. And you wonder now if Guentzel was stuck around, if things would be different. I don't know how much better they would have been than 7-1-2 in their last 10.
He certainly was.
He was very helpful in Carolina. But how much better could they have closed out this season? They actually have played better than most of the teams that are in the playoffs right now down the stretch here, other than like the Islanders, who are 8-1-1. But is there smoke to this fire? Is there fire on this smoke of the possibility of Sidney Crosby getting traded away from Pittsburgh?
Again, I brought it up with several people when I called a game in Pittsburgh last month,
and they shunned you,
and they were just like, that's never going to happen. I don't think they shunned me because I think it's a legitimate question, but they were adamant that it would not happen. Now, okay, I understand that from Pittsburgh's perspective because he's so loyal, and you still want to put fannies in the seats, and I guess they have to continue to double and triple down because they've got Carlson under contract, Letang, Malkin.
Right.
These guys are aging, and I guess, see it through, although I think you got to try to get out from under and do what Washington, Washington's been able to make it work by keeping Ovechkin but yet still trying to create a rebuild. And now it worked out for them. Best of both worlds, they find themselves in the playoffs. I don't think they're equipped to make any kind of a run, but they've been able to make it work. And they also have hanging on them the fact that they want to see Ovechkin break Gretzky's record as a Capital. Now, and he's only got the one cup. Well, Sidney's got three, and there's no record in sight other than he just wants to finish with Pittsburgh. And if he wants to finish with Pittsburgh, then I guess you have an obligation to see that through. But if you ever knocked on Dubas's door and said, listen, I want to go someplace else, I think you have an obligation to then trade him.
And they have no caps based on. How are they going to fill out this roster?
They're in a world, and he's the only movable piece. He really is.
Yeah, Malkin's not going anywhere. I think Brian Rust is very good. I don't know who's going to take on the the 31-year-old with four more years left on a deal that's 5.125. But I don't think they want to get rid of Brian Rust. Rickard Rakell, he's 30. He's got four more years. Riley Smith makes $5 million next year. And that's it. I mean, I guess Riley Smith is movable if you can, if you eat some money, maybe. Somebody has a desire to take him.
Negative cap space.
But by the way, Don, we're talking about this like, oh my God, they have to make the cap work. They also want to try to win. Because if you're keeping Sidney Crosby, you're not moving him. This is the last year of his deal. You got one more shot at this. Erik Karlsson, $10 million for the next 3 years. Chris Letang makes 6.1. He's going to be 40 by the end of that contract.
No, it's a really bad situation for them.
Malkin's 37. Wow.
Man, so they're in cap hell.
They're in cap hell.
And you know, like I said, like Sidney Crosby becomes a free agent. So what are you going to lose him in free agency? You want to try to get something for him? I just think I'd be if I'm Sidney Crosby, I'd want to be moved. And I guess he doesn't want to be that guy. But what I would tell Sid is, hey, listen. All right. Wayne Gretzky played for four different teams.
Mm-hmm.
Denny Savard ended up in Montreal. Martin Brodeur played a handful of games in St. Louis with the Blues.
Henrik Lundqvist was healthy, he would have played for the Capitals.
Yeah, Henrik Lundqvist would have been a member of the Washington Capitals. I mean, so we got to stop. If Wayne Gretzky could be traded, then certainly anybody could be traded. And isn't it better to be moved and have a chance while you're still healthy and you're still relatively young to go win rather than be in this hell? And I don't even know, again, it's just going to get worse when you re-sign them. Because I don't know how they're going to be able to get out from under. Again, Carter's gone.
You can't bring him back. That's out.
You know, but really, that's it. You know, like everybody else is still under contract. Giving Malkin that money, ridiculous.
You got Achari.
Letang that money, ridiculous. The Karlsson deal is going to kill them.
You've got Ryan Graves and Nola Achari that are on LTIR right now. That's $6.5 million. Even if the $5 million for Jeff Carter comes off the books. Or how much he? Sorry, 3.125. It's not even that. You still have $3 million more dollars than you have right now, and the cap space they have, according to Cap Friendly, is $20,000. So it's not even a matter of like can you keep Sidney Crosby? Like they're gonna have to field the team in some capacity. They might have to get creative here. Maybe move Marcus Pettersson, who makes $4 million and is 27 years old. I don't know.
And again, I don't know what Colorado's cap situation is. I guess I can look it up. You know, go play with McKinnon at the end of the career. And listen, the Golden State Warriors are going through the same thing in the NBA. And then you heard Kerr say that they're going to roll it back after they got beat last night in the play-in.
Oh, my God.
But they're in the same situation. They're stuck, too.
Don, they have no cap space. The Avalanche. They have one RFA, and then 9 unrestricted free agents on their roster next year.
Right, so they're going to reconfigure the
Trennan,
whole thing.
Trennan, Duhaime, Cogliano, Drouin, Parisi, Kiviranta, Walker, Johnson, Jones. So they could certainly, and Casey Mittelstadt's an RFA, and he's 25 years old. I imagine they would end up paying him. The roster it consists of Nathan MacKinnon, who makes over $12 million, Mikko Rantanen, who makes 9.25, Nichushkin makes over $6 million, Lekkonen makes $4.5 million, Ross Colton makes $4 million, and Miles Wood makes $2.5 million. That's your forwards, by the way. Mm. So can they take on the Crosby contract? They absolutely can. Would they have to get creative in moving everything around? Because Devin Toews, Josh Manson, Sam Girard, and Cale Makar account for $25 million of cap space as defensemen. And you basically have to fill out the rest of your roster with either, you know, entry-level deals or guys like Jack Johnson who will make veteran minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're going to have to do that. It'll be interesting. And Georgiev makes 3.4, and he's in UFA 2 years from now.
Yeah, so it's a lot to be discussed, I think, during the offseason.
This is fun.
And I'd like to see. I'm a fan of Sidney Crosby. I am. I know a lot of Ranger fans aren't. A lot of
fans
around the league. I think he's spectacular, and I'd love to see him playing for a cup. And I don't think that's going to be happening in Pittsburgh anytime soon. I know they've come close, but this is now two straight years of missing the playoffs. So, and I don't think it's going to get any better anytime soon. Now, we're locked in on the West. The only thing that's up in the air. So, every series is set. So, we know the Rangers are going to play the Washington Capitals. Carolina's going to take on the Islanders. The Boston Bruins, Toronto Maple Leafs, Florida Panthers, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, that's your set. You're set in the East. Nothing can change that. There are still two series up for grabs in the West. With Winnipeg's win, they clinch the 2 seed in the Central. So, they're locked in to play Colorado. And we know that Vancouver is going to take on Nashville. So we know that that's locked in. What we don't know is who Dallas is going to play. It could be either Vegas or Los Angeles, and the same goes for Edmonton. Right now, Vegas has the three in the Pacific Division, 1 point ahead of the Kings. They both have one game left. From a tiebreaker standpoint, the Kings have more regulation wins than Vegas. So those that will be all determined coming up on Thursday when those two teams will play. The Vegas Golden Knights are home against the Anaheim Ducks. No offense to the Ducks, but I think Vegas has got 2 points there. Kings taking on the Blackhawks. I think the Kings are going to win their game. So it looks to me, unless the Golden Knights completely fold at home against the Ducks, that you're going to see Vegas get the three. So then that would mean Vegas in the Western Conference would play Edmonton, and then the Los Angeles Kings will play the Dallas Stars. That's the way it's going to probably go, but we won't have that confirmed until the finish of play on Thursday.
We're going to have, and I said it again, I think no matter what happens here, the Atlantic is the most exciting overall bracket out of the four divisions. But we're going to have some really, really exciting matchups. Winnipeg-Colorado is going to be one of the best matchups in these playoffs. I think Edmonton-Vegas is spicier than Edmonton-LA. But like I said, Don, the way that it's shaking out, if things stand where they are, I think that you talked about, which team would you be surprised wins? I think if Dallas plays LA, I'd be very surprised if LA wins that series. I could be totally off base on that. But I think Dallas is playing extremely well, and I think that would be the series that you kind of say, okay, I didn't see that. I didn't see that coming. I think Dallas is just overall better. Florida-Tampa, I have no pulse on. And Boston-Toronto, like you said, Don, you think Boston might lose it. And I don't know if I'm ready. Toronto just has that feeling to me of, is this a different team? Same thing with Edmonton. We'll see. This going to be different than years past? Or are they going to do what they always do and find a way in the playoffs to not get it done?
I think the way it's set up is the way that it should be set up. I think the two series that are the easiest to predict are the two 1-8s. As you said, Dallas-Los Angeles. Dallas will be a heavy favorite. Rangers and the Capitals. Rangers will be a heavy favorite. You never know, though. Crazy things
happen.
I believe
they're -375 to win the series.
And that's the way it goes. And I think it's a really tough spot for the Islanders against Carolina. Just I think Carolina is so good. They might be right now going into the playoffs the best team in the NHL. Florida can be in that conversation with their four-game winning streak. But Carolina has been so good for so long. And they usually take care of business in the first round 2 years
Winnipeg's
ago.
Winnipeg's on fire, too, Don.
Each other. Winnipeg, seven straight wins. But they got to take on Colorado. That's no small feat. So I think the playoffs are going to be great. So we will have all that going on, coming up a little bit later on this weekend, and we'll get the whole schedules and everything. It starts on Saturday, and there'll be teams that'll start their series on Sunday as well. So everything will be happening coming up this weekend. Let's hear from you at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Same for Anthony Pusick as I go through our notifications here and see what everybody has to say as we get closer and closer to the playoffs. David says, debated the Arizona situation with a friend, a Wild fan, that hates the Salt Lake relocation and argued that even with the same ownership, it'd be difficult for the NHL and NBA to thrive in a small market at the same time. As better of a situation Utah is this a valid point? Again, I don't know the landscape in Utah. They're hot for a team. I don't think they're hot for a team, Anthony, just because of pride. I think they think it could work there. They've got no baseball. They've got no football. I don't think there's a lot of crossover NBA-NHL, so they must know. I know there have been minor league teams there that have done well. I think believe it or not, the Islanders had, if I'm not mistaken, a minor league affiliate in Utah way back in the day. I'm going to say they probably, investing over $1 billion in this early on, that I'm sure they did the legwork knowing that it's going to work out.
Yeah, look, I agree with you, Don. And look, the Utah Jazz did not make the playoffs this year. And by all accounts, they were, it was kind of determined early on that they weren't going to make the playoffs just based on the way that they're kind of rebuilding there. They ended up having the 14th highest attendance in the NBA this season. With an average of 18,000 fans. So the Utah area, does show out for their teams. And there's a level of pride to that and this, that, and the other. And you know that the Jazz owner has always expressed interest in having a hockey team in Utah. I'm going to say something very dumb as a fan. And it's such a base thought, but it's like, oh, it's a cold city, so obviously they'll like hockey. But the Winter Olympics were in Utah. I mean, there's obviously a fan base that will appreciate a hockey team in Utah, and having a second mm-hmm. team, we've seen what it does for other areas, Don. Like, and the way that Seattle and Vegas have welcomed their teams with open arms. Seattle was begging to have another big four team, and they got it, and they showed out for the Kraken. They may not be doing well ratings wise on TV, but the fans certainly appreciate having a team there. And I think the same will happen for Utah.
Tim says, how should Wings and Flyer fans judge this season? Both overperformed expectations, but also blew huge opportunities down the stretch and missed out on getting their young players valuable postseason experience to aid their development. I know Philadelphia blew the lead, but when you look at what happened to Carter Hart, that I'm less disappointed in Philly than I would be in Detroit. Now, both are progressing in the right direction, but this has been a long drought now for the Red Wings, and I think it probably hurts them a little bit more. There's still teams that have a bright future and developing in the right direction, but I think they're extenuating circumstances with Philly that really pulled the plug on them. I thought they showed some heart early, but let's not get crazy and look at them being the 3 seed and 150 consecutive days in the playoffs. There are reasons why this thing kind of banged up, and losing their starting goaltender is probably first and foremost.
Yeah, I think there's a different type of disappointment when something happens that you don't expect versus when you expect something and it doesn't happen, if that made sense. I think that both Detroit and Philly knew it was going to be an uphill climb, both in their divisions and in their conference, to make the playoffs this year. I think if you take a look at it and not know the whole backstory of Philly and see this collapse and you think, oh my goodness, how could this have happened? It's a disappointment. But I think both teams know that this is not their best effort. Like, Pittsburgh has to be disappointed because there's not much they can do. We just talked about it in terms of their cap situation to improve their team massively, and they didn't make the playoffs. I think Philly's young, and I think they're going to get better. I think Detroit is young. Steve Yzerman knows how to push all the right buttons. He did it down in Tampa. He'll do it in Detroit. And they, I think, will be a team to be reckoned with next year and a playoff team. But you take a look at the teams around and say, who are they going to knock off? They're going to have to be significantly better than their 91 and 87 point finishes probably to be that playoff team. But I think that it's, as a fan right now, you're very disappointed when you look back at this season and go, you know what, we only missed the playoffs on a tiebreaker. As a Red Wing fan, you're like, I don't know if you could have thought that's exactly where we thought we'd be. So I think that there's some level of disappointment, but overall, I think the future's bright for both teams.
Jimmy Berger did some work. I want to show appreciation to him.
Because he's a good man.
As real as the curse of the President's Trophy may feel, relax, Ranger fans. Since the trophy came into the league, 22% of the time, the team that they won the cup. I made the chart with a breakdown. Why not us? And looking at 1 through 16, so 1 being the President's Trophy winner, since the trophy was handed out that first year, 85-86, it's still, that's the highest percentage to win the cup. Of that time, 8 President's Trophy winners have won. That's 22% of the time. The 2 seed is won 11% of the time. The 3 seed, 8. The 4 seed, 16. Kind of crazy. The 7 seed, 11 times. Like, so it's kind of crazy. And 14, 15, and 16, by the way, have never won the Stanley Cup. So the point is, and that's overall, because I know the Los Angeles Kings were an 8 seed, but I don't think they were ranked as low with the overall league. So it still tells you that if you're the best team in the NHL, you still have the highest percentage of winning the Stanley Cup since the trophy was awarded in 1986. They got that going for
them. Well, you know what? I know. It's going to say President's Curse and this, that, and the other. The bottom line is that you got to take care of business. And the Rangers earned themselves the right to play who is, at the present moment, the worst team out of the East to make the playoffs in the Capitals. Everyone talks about the Rangers' 5-on-5 play being so bad. The Capitals are actually worse 5-on-5 in goals for percentage, according to the fancy stats. So that is a matchup that you think that you can win if you're the Rangers, and you should be able to do it in less than 7. Enough with these 7-game series against the Washington Capitals. But Carolina's going to be tough. And in a non-bracketed system, you probably don't play Carolina until later in the playoffs. But that is not the way that this works. And even the Islanders, if they manage to get past Carolina, that would be tough, because that means that you out-Carolina'd Carolina, and that is a team that the Rangers have had fits with for years. And the Islanders' defense was something that the Rangers struggled with at the end of the season when they were at their best with Patrick Roy behind the bench. I'm not saying that there's a clear path here for the Rangers to make the Stanley Cup final, but I think that if they play their best, they should be able to win their round one matchup. And if they can get past Carolina, there's no reason to think that they can't beat whoever comes out of the Atlantic bracket. So I think that I don't know if I would say disappointment if the Rangers don't make the Stanley Cup final. I think that's a hard bar to clear. But in the first year under Peter Laviolette, this team has certainly turned themselves around, but you have to showcase that you can do what you need to do in the playoffs, make it to at least round two, and hopefully the Eastern Conference final, to say that this was a successful season. By the way, credit to Troy, one of our loyal listeners on Twitter. He did the work for us. Another person that did the work, and we really appreciate all you guys doing all this for us, of the Thanksgiving. The American Thanksgiving, yes. 7 out of 8 teams in the Eastern Conference made it. Detroit is out and the Islanders made it. And in the West, 6 of 8 teams made it. St. Louis out, Seattle out, Edmonton and Nashville in. And it took massive win streaks for all of the teams that were out and that made it in to do that.
It's still a thing.
It's a pretty good bar. It's a pretty good indicator.
It's definitely still a thing. How about this? Sean Gleason, you'll appreciate this, Anthony. In keeping parallels with the 94 season, President's Trophy, OJ, Knicks, etc., is it time to bring the anthem, is it time to bring back the anthem drownout? I think John Brantsey would approve.
Anthony, he responded,
Cusick,
by the way.
Young, but nothing compares to the energy created screaming over John Amarante. Well, John Brantsey has responded. Now, John Brantsey does a great job singing the anthem on occasion, and then in the second intermission, we'll sing New York, New York. Now, John Amarante, we lost him. God, it's probably been over 10 years now.
Actually, Don, I think this is the 6-year anniversary of his passing.
Oh, 6 years. Yeah, but I don't know if he was singing right up until...
No, he was not. In terms of being the anthem singer, I think a couple of years before that was when he stopped doing that.
But he was great, and John's great. So John responds. He says, I haven't even sung my loudest. Probably at 60% of my total volume every anthem. So bring it on. It'll be interesting. I think people see the parallel between John Brantsey and John Amarante. So I think that could be great. So anybody, for people that aren't listening, that aren't Ranger fans or in New York, that's kind of a thing. Like 94 was 30 years ago. Knicks also made a run. The OJ chase and an OJ passing away. So a lot of different parallels. People trying to find some similarities to this 2024 team, to the 94 team. That 94 team also won the President's Trophy. So should be very, very interesting. Speaking of which, 94, the general manager of that team is Neil Smith. And Neil Smith is nice enough to join us here on Game Misconduct. So, Neil, it's Don LaGreca and Anthony Pusick. How are you, sir?
I'm good now that I'm on with you guys. I'm having a good day, and it's always fun to talk hockey.
Yeah, Neil's a lot of fun. People, of course, Ranger fans remember him, general manager of the championship 30 years ago, 1994. Had a lot to do with the building of the Detroit Red Wings back in the day and the Islanders, and was the general manager of the Islanders as well. Now he's doing a podcast called NHL Wraparound, and he's also part of a documentary that just started airing yesterday on ESPN+. Saving Sakic, when Joe Sakic was a free agent with the Avalanche. And we've got, it was so long ago, you're showing our age, Neil, unfortunately, that there's a lot of fans that don't remember how difficult it was to even become a free agent in the NHL. You weren't eligible for free agency until you turned 31. And then it was like, then it was the compensation if you lost a free agent. And then the offer sheet is what we're talking about here with Joe Sakic possibly becoming a Ranger. Why don't you explain to us exactly what it meant to try to get a free agent of that ilk back in the day?
Well, it was it wasn't at all like today. There was two categories of free agents. There was Group One, which was unrestricted free agents, which there were very few on the market back in those days, and then there was Group Two, which was restricted free agents, and Joe Sakic was in that group. When a player became a Group 2 free agent, it was once in a blue moon that anybody ever gave them an offer sheet. And an offer sheet isn't really an offer. It's a signed contract. So when you give Joe Sakic an offer sheet, that means he agreed to it. And so he had signed a contract with the Rangers. But the reason it's called an offer sheet is because the Avalanche had the 7 days to match the offer. If the Avalanche or the team in question doesn't match that Group 2 contract offer, then there's a series of first-round picks. I think it was four first-round picks or something like that that the team would get compensated with. And the only times that I remember a player leaving under those conditions was when Scott Stevens actually left Washington Capitals, was signed by the St. Louis Blues, and then the same thing, the St. Louis Blues signed Brendan Shanahan away from the New Jersey Devils, and as compensation, Lou Lamoriello was able to get Scott Stevens from the St. Louis Blues, and that's how Scott Stevens, the infamous Hall of Famer with his number retired over in New Jersey, that's how he became a Devil, was through that category.
And if I remember correctly, Neil, they tried to negotiate compensation, and St. Louis offered Rod Brind'Amour and Curtis Joseph, and Lou said no. And the league awarded Scott Stevens. How much things would have been different had Lou said yes to Brind'Amour and to Curtis Joseph?
Yeah, it was... It was fortuitous for Lou, without a doubt, that he got Scott Stevens awarded to him. Things would have been much different. Those were different days. I mean, the reason, you know, we got Adam Graves through another type of free agency, as you know. He was what was called a Group 3 free agent, which was you were a young player, your contract had expired, and you had the chance to sign with other teams, and the team you were with had no right to match. That's why I was able to sign Adam Graves out of Edmonton, and we ended up putting up Troy Millett as what we felt was equalization, they called it, and the arbitrator awarded the Oilers Troy Millett for Adam Graves. That's how that one went down back in the day, but that's all gone now. None of that stuff happens.
So the documentary is Saving Sakic. It's airing right now on ESPN Plus. You get to see Neil tell those stories. And it's really a story of the chairman of the board of the Colorado Avalanche, Charlie Lyons, trying to now come up with the money to be able to match Neil's offer and keep Joe Sakic in Colorado. And, of course, that's exactly what he did. But, you know, Neil, it's the 30th anniversary of course, the Rangers Stanley Cup in 94 and how magical a season that was. Rangers win the President's Trophy this year. You're getting those same vibes, you know, with OJ's passing and the Knicks being really good and how crazy the Garden was 30 years ago. Do you think this Rangers you see similarities in this team to the 94 team?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. All those things you just said about the Knicks being so good. And, of course, I went to Game 7 against the Houston Rockets that year. Sat courtside in the Garden for a couple of their playoff games right by Spike Lee. And the Garden was magical in those days. You know, we were, in all due respect to the guys that were on that team, we were a very dominant team in the league back in 1994, 92 and 94. And it was a lot easier, Don, in those days to predict the cup winner than it is today. I think today the parity is so strong in the league that you really don't have that, you know, that odds-on favorite that's going to win. But you know what? The Rangers give them all the credit in the world. They won the President's Trophy. They were the best regular season team, no doubt about it. And it's always good to end in first place. I get a laugh out of people who say, oh, well, the President's Trophy doesn't mean anything. The President's Trophy winner has not won the Stanley Cup since 2013. But you should really take a source of pride in the fact that you ran a marathon and came in first. Now, everybody's only going to remember who wins the sprints at the end of the year, which is the playoffs. But that six-month endeavor to win that trophy was a heck of a thing to do.
The other thing I always reference you, Neil, is we did NHL live shows together, and when the shootout came into being, you said, you know, you can't just look at wins because not every win is the same with the shootout, and then of course the addition of the 3-on-3 overtime. Take a look at the goal differential. That's a great indicator. Well, every team negative is out of the playoffs in the West, and every team that's a positive goal differential is in. The only two aberrations are in the East, with Washington and the Islanders being a negative goal differential and still making the playoffs. Why did you look at that statistic as a major indicator on why a team is good or bad?
You know, when you're trying to predict what's going to happen in the league, and you don't have a, I think the important thing is, Don, it's, I don't have a dog in the fight. People will say to me all the time, are you a Ranger fan? Are you an Islander fan? Are you this or that? And I'm not a fan, really. I'm a fan of what I think is going to happen. And so 2 years ago, I predicted before the playoffs started that Colorado would win the cup. I did that on right on live radio. And it's because I that's the part of this that I enjoy. So going back to goal differential, what I looked at was you can go back, and you'll find that very seldom does a team that has a large goal differential, A, make the playoffs. Even if they've got a large goal differential at Christmas, they rarely make the playoffs. And B, at the end of the season, 90% of the pluses are in the playoffs, 90% of the minuses are out of the playoffs with the odd anomaly. The one that I could find that was the biggest goal differential in a negative way that made the playoffs was Detroit way back. And I actually texted this to Craig Lachlan when he was doing a game about a week ago for Washington, because, you know, Washington was such a heavy negative and ended up a heavy, I think, 30-something negative.
37.
I think that minus 37 is the highest that a team has ever made the playoffs with that big of a minus. So I guess the point is, Don, is that like at Thanksgiving, I'll look and say, okay, Columbus is already minus 25. They're not making the playoffs. You can tell right now at Thanksgiving, they're not making the playoffs because they're never going to be able to extinguish that minus all season long. So I just found that it's an easier way to predict things than it is by looking at points or wins, because those things aren't as accurate, because they, you know, the schedule is always in balance, right? One team's played two more than another team or three less than another team. So, but when you see goal differential, that's a tough thing to make up when to try to get back to even, and you're banking on being one of two anomalies out of 16 teams this year. So 16 teams are positive, two teams are negative. And they found a way to get in.
I'm a little concerned about Boston. I mean, they've been good all year long, but you lose Krejci, you lose Bergeron. They didn't look great the last week of the season. Ended up losing out on the division, and now have to match up with Toronto, which is probably not bad considering they've had the Maple Leafs number. What do you make of Boston, and do you think they're a legitimate threat in the East?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that I think that Jim Montgomery has done a fantastic job running the Boston Bruins. Last year's magical season that they had, I mean, they were by far the best team in the league, in my opinion. I know they lost to Florida, but still, they were the best team in the league, and there was a lot of money lost on betting on the Boston Bruins to win the Cup. I woke up this morning thinking about them and thinking about Florida. And what a downer it's got to be for the Bruins organization and their players, their coaches, their fans. They should be hanging a banner in the building that says 2024 Atlantic Division Champions. And they blew it last night by losing a home game to Ottawa Senators, and they handed it over to the Florida Panthers, who are now going to hang that banner in their building. And again, I said it before, Don, but I think it's a big deal. When you get to hang a banner in your building, it's always a good thing. It can never be a bad thing to be hanging a banner. So I would worry if I was a Bruins fan that this is a very negative way to go into the playoffs. It's like letting a goal in the last minute of a period, right? You don't want to go into the locker room having just let a goal in That's worse. I think this is the same for the Bruins. I worry about them now because, and I could see Toronto knocking them out this year because of the negativity swirling around them, and they're probably going to be very, they're going to be hit with a feeling of they're not going to be a secure team. In other words, they're going to have their own internal doubts about themselves because they blew it.
Neil, what do you think of this bracket system that the NHL's implemented for the Stanley Cup playoffs? You know, you get the early rivalry matchups if you have teams in the Atlantic playing each other and teams in the Metro playing each other. But then when you get later in the rounds, there's a team that may be playing a team in another system where you reseed. They wouldn't really be playing until much later. Do you like the bracket system, or did you like the 1-8 system much better?
You know, when I was still GM of the Rangers, Gary was trying to get us, convince us, not meaning the Rangers, meaning the other GMs and the league, to go to the bracket system because it's so much better for TV. And it's better to know, okay, this is where we're going after this round, meaning all the trucks and all the different things, the advertisers, the sponsors, everybody gets to know, definitely if you win this round, where we're going. And although that makes monetary and logistical sense, I'm an old school guy. I like the Rangers got it this year. They get to play 16, but it just happened to turn out that way. Washington is number 16 in the playoffs this year. Rangers are number one. That's who they deserve to get. They deserve to get number 16. But I think that two deserves to get 15. If you can't do it like that because you don't want to mix the West and the East, I still think it should be, you know, 1-8, 2-7, and I think you should reseed because that's the fairest competitive way to find out who's the best team. To have either Boston or Toronto gone after this round in the East is tough. I mean, there's three contenders right there in the Atlantic Division. I think anybody would agree that the Bruins, all season except for last night, Florida and Toronto are Stanley Cup contenders, and you're going to lose at least one of them after the first round. And I don't like it for that reason because I'm old school competitor, but I understand for business and for logistics that the bracket system works better.
And one question about the doc, Saving Sakic, which you can watch on ESPN Plus right now. You know, looking back on it, this is an offer sheet that was given in 1997. And I hate to do this, and I know, you know, and nobody has a crystal ball and anything could happen, but how much would have changed hockey if Joe Sakic did go to the Rangers? Do they win another cup in the 90s? Does Ray Bourque ever get to kiss that cup with Colorado in 2001? Do you believe that if Joe Sakic was a Ranger, that you would have won another cup in the 90s?
Really hard to say, but I can tell you that if Joe Sakic, here's the reality of it. We missed the playoffs in 98, 99, and 2000. The reason that we were struggling in those years was because we were trying to rebuild the team after losing a lot of assets on our run through the mid-90s there in 92, 93, 94, 95. We started to lose a lot of players and didn't have the younger players in our cachet to be able to keep that high level. I think if Joe Sakic had become a Ranger, you wouldn't have seen us missing the playoffs 2 years in a row. I think Wayne Gretzky might not have retired when he did because we would have been a better team, and it would have been easier for Gretz to play on that team than it was on the team that he was surrounded by. As far as the Avalanche go, I can't imagine that they would have been as good as they were had they lost Sakic. The first round picks that they would have gotten from the Rangers certainly wouldn't have made up for him in the short run. I think that the Rangers would have been a lot better. Would they have won the Stanley Cup? I don't, you know, it's hard for me to say if Joe Sakic was on the team in 98, 99, or 2000, he alone would have made us from a non-playoff team to a Stanley Cup team. I mean, that's a bit of a reach. So I'll say that I think we would have been a much better team, and we would have been a playoff team instead of a rebuilding team like we were trying to do. If you remember those days, we had a lot of young players, and they were all in the lineup. I think my last year there, we had seven rookies in the lineup. So that's what I can say if we had gotten Sackett.
Well, Neil Smith also has a podcast if you want to hear that NHL wraparound. So wherever you get your podcast, definitely listen to that. So I don't know if you're going to save it for your podcast or whether you'll give it to us here, but who do you have winning the Stanley Cup this year?
You know, Don, I have liked the Florida Panthers all season. And the reason I've liked them so much is that I talked to Keith Tkachuk. I had him on the podcast, and I talked to him about this. I said, usually when a team wins the President's Trophy and gets bounced like they did 2 years ago, and then they go through a tough season and they end in eighth in the conference, and then they, you know, they end up magically being a Cinderella team to go to the final. Usually that team has a real tough year the next year. I mean, if you look at history, you'll see that Cinderella teams that go to the final usually have a tough season right after that. They think they're better than they are. They don't do the things they needed really to do, and they have a tough year. The Florida Panthers have done the opposite. They've almost gone back to the President's Trophy. I mean, they have, what are they? They're only 4 points behind the Rangers in that President's Trophy, and they have one game to go. So they may even end up only 2 points behind the Rangers. Having said that, I think that their key to their success is that gang mentality that they have, and that they play as a pack. And that's sort of a playoff mentality, you know, that you play as a pack during the playoffs, and you play a grimy, greasy, whatever words you want to use, game. You go into the tough areas, you push and shove. And I think Florida's done that all year long. So in answer to your question, if I had to pick a team that I would be a betting man, and I'm not a betting man, but if I was betting, I really like the Panthers. On the other side, I still love Colorado. I don't think they got the goaltending. Georgiev, unfortunately, even though he is an ex-Ranger, I don't think has been as good as a guy like Hellebuck, certainly, or even Ottinger, or even Thatcher Demko, who's been great for the for the Canucks, and actually Stuart Skinner's been great for the Oilers too. So, you know, there's a lot of guys that have had a good year over there. You know, I think that the Canucks, it's too early for them. In other words, they've gone from non-playoffs for a number of years to first place and almost first in the conference. I don't think that they'll have the experience to go real deep. So in the West, you know, it's a toss-up, but I do like the Florida Panthers in the East because of the way they play.
So check out Neil Smith on Saving Sackick. It is an Amazon Prime Video documentary that you can see on ESPN Plus. It's airing there now. And check out his podcast, NHL Wraparound, where you get your podcasts. Neil, it's great to reconnect again. Hope to talk to you soon.
Well, I'd love to be on with you again, Don. Anthony, thanks for having me on, and have a great day and have fun playoffs.
Thanks, Neil.
So interesting stuff from Neil Smith, and he's got the Panthers and the Avalanche in the Stanley Cup Final with the Panthers winning, and we'll see how right he is about that. And, you know, Neil was talking about, or you asked him a great question, like what might have been had Sakic signed with the Rangers. Think about the Avalanche, right? That's 1997. They ended up winning in 2001, and Ray Bourque finally got to lift the Stanley Cup. Well, if they ended up taking a downturn losing Joe Sakic, and Bourque doesn't go to Colorado. Bourque probably goes, and I don't know if you remember this because you were young at the time, that the three rumored teams he would possibly go to was Detroit and New Jersey, because he wanted to go someplace that had a chance to win. And can you imagine him on the Red Wings? And how many more cups they would have won if he had been there, or if he went to New Jersey, how that have gone. I think Dallas might have been kicking the tires on it as well. So that changes everything. Joe Sakic's the president of the Avalanche. Would he have gone back to the Avalanche to do that, or would he be doing it, you know, with the Rangers? Would he be the GM of the Rangers instead of Chris Drury? Or, you know, like when you talk about all the different things that could have changed had that offer sheet not been matched by Colorado, and he ended up being with the Rangers.
Not to be dramatic, it kind of changes everything.
Well, it does. It changes every. You're right. It changes like you the landscape.
After, you don't hear not, after 22 years Raymond Bourque. It's some iteration of that in some capacity, but it's not that voice.
Well,
like Neil said, you're looking at a Rangers team that yes, they were bereft of not bereft of talent, but bereft of assets after going for it in 94, and rightfully so. I don't think any Ranger fan would complain. But then you go out and you get Gretzky. And you have Messier, and then imagine you have Sakic along with that. I mean, that's an unbelievable team. A number, honestly, Don, probably a number that ends up in the rafters.
Yeah, it really changes everything. It changes the Rangers' fortunes. It changes the Avalanche's fortunes. It changes the fortunes of the team that Ray Bourque ended up on, if not Colorado. It just changes a lot. And the very few do you have like that many pendulums fall where as many of as three teams' fortunes completely change, and Joe Sakic's fortunes change as well. Just very interesting documentary, so definitely check it out. And it was always good to connect with Neil Smith. He's a fun guy to talk to. So we gave you a long one today, so we'll be back on Friday. We'll be able to have our predictions. All of the series will be set on Friday, so we'll do all that and get you ready for the postseason coming up on the weekend. So want to get in touch with us at Don LaGreca, at Anthony Pusick, hashtag Game Misconduct. Talk to you again on Friday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.